New today, a major shakeup in real estate that could change housing costs. We talk with the experts about what this could mean for sellers, buyers, and agents. Then more than 100 Wake County high school students caught in the middle of St. Augustine's University's financial crisis. What's next as they attempt to finish classes for college credit?
Rain is moving out on the dual Doppler 5000 radar. Where temperatures top out this weekend before we drop back into the 30s.
Well, did you get rain this afternoon? You know, that system that brought severe weather to the Midwest is on its way out of our area tonight. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. The sprinkles could stick around a little bit and continue in some spots this evening. Meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRL Severe Weather Center. How's it looking going? It is a Saturday morning, though. A lot of people got a parade on their mind.
Yes, they do. And the good news is I don't think that we're going to have the rain sticking around tomorrow morning, especially not for the parade, but the clouds are going to hold a bit longer. We just got a few sprinkles left tonight. They moved out of the triangle just north of Rocky Mount up into Halifax County, Scott Linette, Roanoke Rapids, seeing some of these showers linger, but rain chances drop off to 20% during the overnight hours. So some good news there. We'll continue to dry out. 72 the high tomorrow, 73 on Sunday. We're partly cloudy tomorrow, but that doesn't come until later in the day. So for the St. Patrick's Day parade happening in Raleigh tomorrow, it's at 10 a.m. trending a little bit cooler with temperatures in the upper 50s toward the beginning, but mid 60s. As we near the end of the parade. By the afternoon, we're in the low 70s, and dinner time temperatures stay in the mid to upper 60s. Coming up, I'll have a closer look at another cold front on the way, and this time it's going to bring a big drop in temperatures.
Thanks, Kat.
And I'm Brian Schrader, all new in the WRL Live Center. We're following a crash and a road closure in Wake County. This is a look at that camera at US 1 at Friendship Road near Apex, and we have a crash with injuries. That call came in only about 20 minutes ago, and DOT says that that road now is blocked completely. I want to take you to the map and show you exactly where that closure begins. US 1 southbound closed right there at 540, and it's closed until you get to New Hill-Holloman Road. So if you're leaving Apex trying to get down into the New Hill area, use old US 1 to New Hill-Holloman and rejoin US 1 southbound from there. We're working to get details about that crash.
All right, Brian, thank you. A major decision today could change the way you buy or sell your next home. The National Association of Realtors agreed to settle with groups of home sellers, $418 million in damages, eliminating rules on commissions. It used to be brokers got 6% of the purchase price. That could soon be gone, putting the onus on you to negotiate the commission. WRL's Aaron Thomas is covering this story for us tonight, joining us live now in Raleigh. Aaron, how does this proposed settlement impact sellers?
Yeah, Ashley, for a long time, it has been industry standard for these sellers. Before they list their home for sale, they would have to pay this fixed commission fee of 6% that would go to their agent, and that would have to take place before they list it for sale on the multiple listing service. A lot of us know this as MLAS. Now, you'll no longer see that fee incorporated on this site. This now slashes that 6% commission fee and is now up to the agents to negotiate it, as you just mentioned.
Wow. How did we get here? What started the lawsuit?
Yeah, so with this lawsuit, you have these experts that are claiming that these agents were violating antitrust laws. Additionally, you had people accusing them intentionally steering buyers to go to more expensive homes, which then in turn, it helps increase the profit for these agents.
Hmm. Okay, so now I'm thinking maybe I want to buy a home or sell a home. Could this impact home prices?
So ideally for anyone that's on the housing market, you would hope that these housing prices would go down. So tonight we actually spoke with two real estate experts just to get their take on things. We had one person who said this will likely happen, but we won't see it happen immediately. And we actually just finished speaking with Angie Cole of Angie Cole Realty of Raleigh. Here's what she had to say. She says she likely doesn't see this happening given the hot housing market here in the Triangle. Take a listen.
We have a limited, surcharge of homes available and on the market. So we are still seeing locally here appreciation in our market. I don't expect in any way for that to change.
Now, we do want to be clear that right now this is a proposed settlement. It would be up to a federal court to move it in the direction of being approved. If it is approved, we'll likely see these changes sometime in mid-July. Well, Ashley?
You know, a lot of realtors are going to be watching this very closely. Aaron Thomas reporting live in Raleigh. Thank you, as always.
Johnston County just got its first public defender. They got their very own public defender. Tynum Dorn starts the job July 1st. The hope is that she can help relieve the backlog. Their court system is a bit backlog. The Superior Court judge who appointed Dorn says Johnston County is among those areas trying to keep up with fewer resources.
We are a huge county with a huge number of cases. We've got about 225 or 30,000 people now. And so we have the problems of a larger district, and I think we have the need.
We talked a lot last night about why this is important, so let's quickly go through a couple of those details. 48 of North Carolina's 100 counties, almost half, are considered legal deserts. So that means that they have fewer than one attorney for every 1,000 residents. One reason it's so hard to find attorneys for court-appointed work is, frankly, the pay, which ranges from $65 to $85 an hour, which sounds good, but it's much less than they'd make in private practice. Seven other districts also got funding for this new public defender this year. Those in our area include Sampson, Halifax, Northampton, and Alamance counties.
A TSA worker from RDU Airport is charged in connection to a child sex sting operation in Florida. This is pretty disturbing stuff. Investigators say 37-year-old Edmundo Da Silva offered someone $100 to perform sex acts on a child. Da Silva is from Holly Springs, but was arrested in Orlando. Investigators say he was there for a meetup with an undercover detective. He didn't know that much. They arrested and charged Da Silva with human trafficking. The sheriff there says Da Silva tried to suggest he was doing his own investigating. He was using his TSA training.
This is who the federal government trusts to screen you. Makes you wonder when they want to do extra screening on children, doesn't it?
Da Silva is one of eight people charged in this sting operation. The TSA says Da Silva is no longer with the agency. They said in a statement, the TSA does not tolerate unethical, immoral, or illegal conduct.
Hundreds of migrant children will be brought to a former school campus in Greensboro, North Carolina. The American Hebrew Academy will reopen as a facility to unaccompanied migrant children. They have enough beds for 800 kids there, specifically teenagers ages 13 to 17. They would stay for about 2 to 3 weeks while family or sponsors are located. Greensboro's mayor says children aren't at the facility just yet. Some of the state's lawmakers aren't yet sold on this idea. Republican Senator Tom Tillis and Republican Congressman Richard Hudson sent a letter this week demanding some more details. It reads in part, "We have continued to push for information about this facility and have consistently faced significant delays in responses to our inquiries. We are particularly concerned about the need for a facility 2,000 miles away from the border in North Carolina." WRAL heard from people in Greensboro who think the facility is a good idea.
Finding a place to stay for children, it's a wonderful thing. I don't think there's anything better on the planet Earth. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as a citizen and somebody thankful to have citizenship here in the United States and North Carolina, absolutely great.
There are nearly 300 facilities like this one in 29 states. In all, they house 8,600 kids.
The Wake County School Board wants lawmakers to do something about safe gun storage. The board plans to pass a resolution about it at its meeting next week. Law enforcement agencies will be there to lend their support. The meeting is Tuesday at 5 p.m. WRAL's newest documentary unpacks why safe gun storage is so important. You know, lives are on the line. WRAL documentary reporter Kristen Severance explains how more kids are dying from guns and how more kids are the ones pulling the trigger. She meets the families whose lives were changed forever because of unsecured guns. You can watch Unsafe right now on WRALdoc.com.
St. Augustine's University has been facing a lot of challenges right now. Delayed payment to staff, a fight to keep accreditation, plus new leadership is responsible to see it all through. It's not just staff and college students caught in the middle either. There are more than...
Hey, all right, let's go
John, let's go in depth on this Friday night, shall we? We've been talking a lot about the 2024 elections, and many of you wrote about our segment on polling. So thank you. Keep emailing Dan at WRAL.com. Your feedback and your ideas really do drive this segment. Aaron and Ryan both enjoyed the in-depth segment on polling, or at least a piece of it. Ryan writes, don't think for a second we didn't hear you drop an epic Anchorman reference. And Aaron said, you totally slid an Anchorman reference in there, my favorite movie of all time. So you are listening. I love to hear it. Good catch, fellas. And if you missed that reference, please go back and watch the segment. It's on WRAL.com right now. Just search for in-depth. Mike, though, was a little bit more skeptical about the reporting. He wrote, one thing you said really bothered me. You equated political polling and how people digest that information with how people adjust their behavior with the forecasted weather. The data that is used to create weather models is empirical. The potential for someone to lie can't be overlooked, and therefore polling predictions really need to be taken with a grain of salt. So, Mike, great point. You're right on there with on several fronts. The data used for weather forecasting is real, not theoretical. And yes, some people do lie when taking polls, but pollsters know this, and they account for it, at least the ones doing actual scientific polling. See, there is a difference between scientific polls and non-scientific polls. Most of the time, they're pretty easy to differentiate, but not always. For instance, all week we've been talking about our exclusive WRAL news poll about the 2024 election. That is a scientific poll. We partnered with experts to put that together. But if you ever watch us at 4 o'clock on WRAL, you know we do a segment where we ask questions and you can vote right then and there. That is not scientific. Neither are things like Twitter polls. You know, more than 17 million people have voted on whether Elon Musk should step down from Twitter, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's legit. Those examples are pretty obvious. You probably know that. But sometimes non-scientific polls can be tough to spot. We asked a Stanford professor about this.
And the essence of this is random sampling versus not random sampling. It's really cheap and quick to do a non-random sample poll and much more expensive and time consuming to do a random sample poll. And we know that random samples are still highly accurate today, and the non-probability, non-random sample polls are not. And yet you often don't know the difference when you see them covered in the news or anywhere else.
A random sample and a non-random sample. There is a huge difference there. Non-random samples, they're typically taken out of convenience. Now, who are the easiest people for researchers to contact? A random sample, though, they make sure that every member of a population being studied has an equal chance of being contacted for that. Basically, whether or not a poll is legit depends big time on who was surveyed and how. It comes down to sampling, weighting, and margin of error. As the professor just said, sampling is really important. You can't poll every single person in the country, we know that, but you also can't walk up to a street corner, for instance, or just post something online, ask a couple hundred people some question, and then call it a day. You have to intentionally include people from all ages, genders, incomes, races, ethnicities, regions, education levels, all that sort of stuff. And some groups can be harder to reach than others, so pollsters use what's called weighting. And here's where the math comes in, you know, that thing that's also used in the science of weather forecasting. We'll keep it simple. Let's say you polled men and women, but you polled more men than women. Let's say 70% were men, 30% were women, but you needed that sample to be 50-50. Well, then you give more weight to the women's responses and less to the men. In this example, the men's responses now count for 0.7, and a woman's response would account for 1.6. Our viewer, Mike, raised concerns over whether people, though, are really even telling the truth in these polls. It's impossible to know who was truthful and who was not. And that's why scientific polls actually include a margin of error, or a credibility interval, they call it. Oftentimes, it's that teeny tiny text right next to the results saying something like plus or minus 3%. Basically, that means if you ran a poll 100 times with a different sample of people each time, the overall percentage of people responding the same way would be within 3% of that original result. So you might see a poll that says, I don't know, 48% say they vote Republican and 46% say they vote Democrat. But with a 3% margin of error, that result could actually be just as easily 45 for Republican and 49 for Democrat, switching it there. How do they even get that plus or minus number? Well, you know, more math. A common formula is 1 divided by the square root of the sample size. Get your calculators out. But, you know, if a few people fib on their answers, a scientific poll can actually account for that. I like that Mike was skeptical about our reporting in a healthy way. He came back to the source, asked us a question. Hopefully we sorted it out together. That is the point of this segment. It represents you. It represents all of you, Democrats, Republicans, the in-betweens. Love me or hate me, I will take you and your concerns and your questions seriously. So give me your thoughts at dan@wrel.com. Tell me what is on your mind, and we will go in depth.
All right, so Kat, if we were to poll all of our viewers about how many people are annoyed by the pollen that is starting to accumulate on their cars, what do you think it would be?
You've got to be a diehard spring fan to disagree with that statement. You know, it requires a lot of cleaning, pollen season does, and a lot of people suffer from seasonal allergies, myself included. This time of year, we are starting to see the yellow accumulate on the cars, and tree pollen today was the highest it's been so far this season. No surprise there. We were all talking about it when we walked into work today. There was a noticeable glaze on all surfaces. You can really start to see it on the water, too, in a lot of local ponds. Oak trees are the number one pollen out there on today's pollen sample. Ash, pine, pine's the yellow stuff that shows everywhere, and maple pollen are all the issues. Weed and grass remain low. If we look at our average pollen count for the spring season, we usually start to see pollen levels climb during the month of March. Pollen levels, when you actually take the data and sort it and find the average peak, it's around April 7th, so early April. But tree pollen stays high all through April, throughout the entire month. And then as we get into May, the tree pollen starts to back off, but the grass pollen usually peaks as we head into the month of May, and the weed pollen is a fall peak there for us. Dual Doppler 5000 radar, it's pretty quiet at this hour. We didn't quite see enough rain to have a big impact on the pollen levels, but we do still have a few sprinkles in the northeastern part of our area. We'll continue to see that move out. Over the next 5 days, rain chances are pretty minimal, which is good news for weekend plans. I did want to point out that you're seeing the bulk of the rain, even though it's very light in the southeastern part of our state. We could see a few showers Sunday night in those locations. St. Patrick's Day is on Sunday, and a lot of the festivities kick off tomorrow. If you're headed to the parade, temperatures are in the upper 50s to start, quickly warming into the mid 60s throughout the parade. During the afternoon, we're in the low 70s. A lot of clouds in the morning, but as we head into the afternoon, we should see the sun breaking out. Hour by hour, this shows you how much of the sky is covered by clouds. We start out with mostly cloudy skies, almost 90% of the sky covered in clouds, but that number backs off quickly as we head into the evening hours, and you should see a lot more sunshine later in the day. If you're headed to the beach tomorrow, there could be a little bit of rain that lingers in our southern beaches early. A big range of temperatures from the mid 50s in Nags Head to near 70 to the south. Sunday, a little warmer at the coast if you're going to be headed that way. Overall, a fairly nice spring weekend for us. But don't settle into the weather that we had yesterday and much of this week. We've got changes coming. That was the exception for us. This weekend, highs are in the 70s. We're in the 60s by Monday. Back in the 30s by Tuesday and Wednesday mornings. A little bit of a bump up in temperatures by next Thursday, but it's not likely to last very long.
Okay, Kat, thank you. Up next, a little dose of nostalgia for your Friday night. As we look forward to tomorrow's Raleigh St. Patrick's Day Parade, we look back at one of the very first. Remember that big crack in the roller coaster at Carowinds? Well, now we know what caused it. The Department of Labor says it was due to, quote, unidirectional bending fatigue. In English, the pieces were worn down, a crack formed, and it spread. You probably remember the video of the crack on the Fury 325 roller coaster. Carowinds shut down the ride for a few weeks before reopening it in August.
Thanks for translating that.
Yeah.
And thank you for making WRAL your choice for local news. Our next newscast is 10 o'clock at Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Before we go, we want to celebrate tomorrow's Raleigh St. Patrick's Day Parade. We dug into the archives. Take a look.
But the parade went off without a hitch and had people dancing in the streets.
Fine day for the Irish, you know.
Hundreds of Raleigh residents, decked out in something green, be it a t-shirt or a tie, lined the streets of the capital city for the third annual St. Patty's Day Parade. No one was too old or too young to enjoy the fun.
Excellent parade today.
Are you Irish?
Way back, yes, before the revolution in the United States.
The bagpipe playing, I thought that was excellent.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.